Can electricity control animals? Are trees growing us? All these questions you can find the answer to on This Paranormal Life! Hello and welcome to This Paranormal Life, the comedy paranormal podcast where every week we investigate a brand new paranormal tale and come to the conclusion as to whether or not it is truly paranormal. My name is Roy Powers, and across from me sits the one and only Kit Greer.
Thank you for addressing me with the reverence that I am due. Roy, I was a little concerned before we hit record here that those edibles that you said, don't worry, bro, I've got a high tolerance, they ain't making a dent. And then you came out with that "our trees growing us" statement, and I'm starting to worry that it's going to impact the pod.
That's a statement that I had been wanting to ask for a long time, and the pot brownies gave me a good opening.
They provided the answer.
I actually went to the bathroom, flushed the brownies down the toilet, and came out saying, "Do trees grow us?" I'm not high and I need to know it.
On account of being a narc, I had to flush them down the toilet.
That's a good question. Because, you know, some people, you could say, that trees outlive humans. And when humans die, they are buried in the ground where they decompose and become food for the trees, for the plants.
That's so pretty messed up, isn't it?
They kind of do grow us and they kind of eat us as well.
That's quite beautiful. You know, people always say we're made of stardust because stars that exploded a million years ago, their carbon and atoms literally make up our bodies. But the same is also true for other things such as poop. We are also made of poop.
Is that true?
Sure.
What percent?
It depends on the person. You, my friend, the poopy son of a bitch.
You're 100% shit. Imagine you did one of those like DNA tests. Where you like spit in a jar and you send it off and you're like, oh, I can't wait to find out. You know, am I like Irish, Scandinavian? Do I have like a Middle Eastern background? It's just 100% poop emoji. What?
And your partner gets 100% stardust.
Yeah. I'm starting to think I should have sent them a blood sample instead of shitting in a box and mailing it to their office. Look, we don't like to dilly-dally at the start of the podcast. We like to dive straight into the paranormal, straight off into the deep end, whether the pool's been filled or not. We deal with that problem in the air. So let's get started.
Sorry, are you providing your own sound effects?
I'm sure we'll add it in, but I just want to make sure that it is happening in the edit as well.
Okay, because the sound's bad.
Well, it's because I'm sure there'll be some auto-tune in the process. Do you think Lady Gaga sings her own songs without auto-tune? No, she doesn't. Everyone uses auto-tune.
Well, she doesn't sing every instrument. She just does her bit, which I feel like you should stick to.
Right, get I can sing Gaga. Read my, yo, you can read my poker face.
Do you have a case for today?
Of course I have a case. You think these are all blank pages? Is that what you think?
I can see the front one is.
You think
that
I...
can speak for the ones in the middle and back.
You think that I came to your house without a case, asked if I could use your printer, printed off 74 blank pages, and then tried to escape out your bathroom window before realizing it was locked? Is that what you think is happening right now? And now I'm here in the studio, sweating bullets, looking at blank pages?
You're right. That would be a crazy thing to do. I don't know why I would think that. And yet here we are, 10 minutes into an episode. We don't know where we are. You started singing Lady Gaga songs a minute ago.
F*** it. New Gaga song.
You said we didn't want to dilly-dally at the top of the episode.
All right, fine. Today's case. Oh, is it a big one?
My I hope so.
God, it's
because
really
after,
something,
after
all right.
Delaying the start of it for this long, it would need to have a big payoff.
It's
you know, going to
be
listener.
A big one. It sure is. It's paranormal and it's terrifying.
Okay.
And just 1 second. Just going to, there's going to be a quick call really fast.
Okay.
Yeah. Can you send something over? I don't just anything. Just send anything over.
Who are you talking to?
Just find any Wikipedia article and just email it over to my
okay. So you
to my email.
This is great.
No, not the
so
Gmail.
I'm going to wait for you to finish the call as well.
Send it to the Hotmail one, the .co.uk. Beastmaster at Hotmail. No, Beastmaster69@hotmail.co.uk.
On the puck. That's insane.
All right, send it over.
Address.
Thank you. Hey!
So
now I'm ready. Sorry about that.
You don't have an episode ready. And you could have just told me at any point. We could stop the podcast right now. We don't even have to release this. We'll just take a couple hours. You put something together.
I'm so insulted that you don't think that I have a case ready.
I heard you on the telephone saying, send me literally anything, any Wikipedia link.
I'm so insulted that I think I need a little 5-minute break to just check my emails. Because...
that's what you do when you're insulted?
I really think that... hey, I've got a case. I do have a case. There we go. Came in. I mean, it was here. It is here. I'm holding it.
It came in while you were looking at your phone.
Sorry. Oh, here we go.
After the phone call where you asked old... Beastmaster.
Beastmaster69 at hotmail.co.uk. You son of a... if you're going to insult me, do it right.
So you did have that telephone conversation we all heard.
Oh, Jesus. Is this being recorded? Because I've said some incriminating shit. Look, let's dive into today's case that I have prepared and have had prepared for quite a while. It was the spring of 1974 on Fort George Island, Florida, and the Betts family lived in a huge house that they nicknamed The Castle. It was surrounded by woodland, and while things were usually pretty quiet, this night was different. You see, not far from their home, smoke was billowing in the forest. It wasn't long before a full-on bushfire was raging, flames spreading through the woods. But by morning, the fire was out.
Damn.
When they awoke, three members of the Betts family decided to head out and inspect the scene. Mom Jerry and Dad Anton were raking through the charred undergrowth with their oldest son Terry when they noticed a silver ball among the ashes that they'd never seen before.
Hey Mom! Dad! Look at this!
What do you got there, son? A cannonball?
It was bright silver, but heavily scratched, and was much bigger than a typical cannonball. In fact, it was closer to the size of a bowling ball.
Sorry, why would there be a cannonball in the first place?
I don't know, Civil War.
What do you
War
got there, son?
Relic?
A medieval suit of armor?
some sort of... I don't know. So a Civil War relic, possibly. As
I
the
guess
only
you're right. I guess you're right.
It's Florida, so kind of near the coast. So maybe there was some sort of pirate warfare that took place.
I like that.
The object was smooth, except for small triangles engraved into the side of the ball. I actually have a picture of it right here.
Yes,
if you
please.
You want to take a little peek. Getting straight in there with the evidence.
Yes, please. Okay. Is this a to-scale image?
It is absolutely not a to-scale. I did print it quite largely. That was unnecessary, though. I used up a lot of ink
to
do
Rory
that
printed
one. I probably
this on an A1 sheet. I didn't even know my printer could do that. It looks like, it does look like a cannonball. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
This is, if you squint, it looks like a planet. If you don't, it looks like a cannonball. It's just a ball of silver heavily scratched. I don't see the triangular markings, but I'm sure they're somewhere else on the ball.
Yeah, possibly on the other side.
Mm.
Well, thinking that they'd found a neat piece of American history, they picked it up and carried it home. It took a lot of effort, too, because it seemed disproportionately heavy for its size. After the family managed to drag it home, they weighed the object to find out that it weighed 22 pounds, which is 10 kg.
All right.
So it's pretty heavy. Not out of this world.
What
heavy.
Size did you say it was physically?
Like a bowling ball.
Oh, a bowling ball. Oh, wow. Yeah, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
10 kg. That's heavy, though.
But the longer the sphere was in the house, the more they suspected it wasn't what they originally thought. Not only because of the object's odd appearance, but also... because of what it did.
I mean, a cannonball shouldn't do anything.
Right. Especially without the facilitation of a cannon. It should just be. It should just exist. If your cannonball is doing something, that's problematic. One lazy afternoon, the son, Terry, was hanging out at home, messing around on his guitar. The silver sphere was sitting there in the corner of the room. But as soon as Terry started playing, it began throbbing, almost as if it was humming along to the music.
This thing likes rock and roll, okay.
The family's poodle whimpered and put her paws over her ears as the ball vibrated, prompting Terry to drop the guitar and comfort her. Hey, it's all right, girl. I won't do that again. Sure was weird, though. But the strangeness didn't stop there. A few days later, the family were hanging out in the living room and started absent-mindedly just rolling the ball around the floor.
They've angered the ball now. They moved it from its sacred habitat. They've taken it into their home. They've offended it with some big amateur guitar lessons.
Yeah.
And now they're tossing it around like a plaything.
Yeah, this is the equivalent of an Egyptian excavator or archaeologist breaking into a tomb, picking up the skull of an ancient mummy and filling it with Diet Coke. It's insulting. Just leave it. If you're not going to use it for something, just leave it be. You don't need to roll it around the floor.
Don't break off the mummy's dusty arm and use it as a ass scratcher.
Right. It's just insulting.
I mean, would you do this? Do you think if you thought you would find something a la a cannonball of the Civil War era, would you be rolling it around? Do you think you would want to Animal Crossing style run it by the local owl at the museum first?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess it depends what the object is. I feel like a cannonball, you would almost feel like a bit of a dumbass bringing that to, you know, a museum or a curator, just in case they're like, you found a ball of metal. I don't know. How would I know what this is? I can't date this. So if you're just going to keep it as a souvenir, yeah, I guess maybe you would just kind of fidget with it now and again. I'm the kind of person that if I am on the phone, I basically, for the whole duration of the phone call, black out. And as soon as I hang up, I don't know how I got to where I was or how I'm holding what I'm holding.
Yeah. Oh, you know? It's impossible to just stay on the phone and just sit there talking like a psycho.
Yeah, yeah.
You like, gotta do something.
Because especially now where I FaceTime a lot. So many times, like mid-FaceTime call, the other person on the phone will be like, where are you? Yeah. And I'm like 3 blocks away with an ice cream sandwich in my hands. It's like, what?
With a knife with blood on it. Oh, what happened?
Holding a medieval cannonball. Yeah, I can see this. You know, if this thing's been in your house for a long time, you're just like, fuck it. What are we going to do tonight? Roll, kick the ball around, you know?
Okay. Fidgeting. Okay. I just want to raise the questions where they're necessary. But I agree. This is relatively normal behavior.
This is what the show's all about. Questions and sometimes answers. So the family sat there fidgeting, rolling the ball. So what do you guys want for dinner tonight?
I don't know. Maybe spaghetti and corn?
Spaghetti and corn again? I tell you, if it wasn't for Taco Tuesday, every day in this house we'd be eating. All of a sudden, the ball stopped in its tracks. What the hell? The ball had stopped in the middle of the room. It then slowly started rolling back to the person who pushed it. The family continued to roll the sphere and couldn't believe what they were seeing. It was stopping in place, changing direction, moving all by itself.
Oh shit.
Yeah, this is pretty scary, isn't it?
At first I thought this was just some kind of ancient Alexa. But it's actually OP.
It's actually an ancient Roomba. This thing has a mind of its own. The son, Terry, was particularly drawn in by the sphere and started doing his own experiments on it. I think I gave Terry a child's voice earlier on in the story. I think he is more of a man than a boy.
Oh.
I don't know why I think son and think 11 years old. So he started doing his own experiments on the ball. First off, he hit it with a hammer. I don't know if you can call that an experiment. But I guess it is to some degree. But when he did hit it, he noted that it rang like a bell. And when he shook it, there was something rattling inside.
Well, probably now that you broke it with a goddamn hammer, it made the noise.
It made the noise before the hammer hit. And there was always that hammer-shaped dent in the side. That was also there. He popped it on a glass table to see how it would behave on a perfectly flat surface. It would roll right to the edge of the table and then stop. Then it would roll in the opposite direction to the other side and back again over and over.
This thing is too smart.
Yeah.
This is getting worrying.
Creepy, isn't it? They all agreed it was like the sphere was trying to make it to the ground as safely as possible. So it is kind of like an intergalactic Roomba. You know, it can detect the ledges and then it's like, well, can't go that way. Oh, can't go that way. Can't go that way. It's like stuck on this table.
And it's kind of hard to know, isn't it? At first, you might think, oh, this thing's just got like a weird center of gravity. That's why it's moving around. Like I'm pretty sure they've made a shape. I don't know what it's called, but it's like a shape that like no matter what way you put it down, it will like move and flip over to the way it wants to be.
Right.
You can make interesting shapes that will move around, but there's no kind of shape that goes back and forward across the table over and over again.
This kind of reminds me of, did you ever have that toy when you were a kid? It was like The weasel ball?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. It's like this electric ball that you put batteries in, and for some reason it has like a little fluffy toy weasel attached to it. And the idea is that this ball just moves by itself. It rolls around, mm-hmm. and the weasel flip-flops all over the place. This kind of like in my head is a version of that without the weasel, obviously. It's just this weird ball moving back and forward. Yeah. But he's maybe a little more self-aware than the weasel ball was. Because I did smash the weasel ball with a hammer. And
I must understand your secrets.
I originally thought it was an old-timey Civil War weasel before taking it to a museum where I was quickly thrown out. The adults in the family were starting to get concerned that this thing was being possibly operated remotely.
Shit, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, it's pretty spooky, isn't it? Either from somewhere else in Florida, elsewhere on Earth, or even outside of Earth.
Or even outside of Florida.
God forbid.
Some f***er in Michigan is remote controlling this thing. Can you imagine those psychos?
There's a weasel in Georgia controlling the ball. And if all of this wasn't enough to get the family worried, they really started to freak out when the ball started defying gravity.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
When they raised one end of the table, instead of rolling off the end like a normal ball, it spun around in place before heading up the incline.
Oh, boy.
Towards the raised end of the table.
This is when you start looking into buying a cage, like you would get for a caged animal.
I think they did do that eventually to keep this thing under control so it wouldn't just roll around the house bumping into things. Terry also noticed that it seems like the ball was more active when the sun was shining. He suspected it was fueled by solar radiation.
Interesting.
Curiously, if the ball was shaken vigorously and then placed on the floor, it would roll around and it sounded like as if there was motion inside the sphere. The family decided it must be some kind of gyroscope, judging by the way it could right itself and move unprovoked. The Betts family ended up having to keep the ball in a box to keep it rolling around the house by itself at night.
They find whenever they dunked the ball in brandy, it appeared to get lit and would make squiggling, walking drunk motions around the table.
One of the comparisons for this case is actually the case that I did a week ago, 2 weeks ago, the Kara UFO incident.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though the object in that story was kind of like a hat, like a flying saucer, the top part was very orb-like. And it was completely sealed over. And a lot of people draw comparisons between these two cases, saying that this object is a lot like the Kara object.
Very interesting. This could be like the Kara 2.0. I mean, this did happen in a very similar time period. Wasn't Kara 1971 or something?
Oh, yeah, you're right, actually.
It's only a couple of years apart.
But on distant parts of the Earth as well. Very interesting. Things really got strange when the family started hearing creepy organ music playing.
What?
Playing in their house at all hours of the day. I forgot about this part.
Okay.
I maybe should have cut this.
Let's dwell on this for a second. So this thing's going from... So let's be clear. This music is coming from the ball.
I believe so. It's not like the ball is rolling up and down an organ that exists in the house.
The ball bought an organ, got it shipped to the house.
The ball was seen playing Van Halen's Jump. It was actually pretty good.
You know how fast a ball has to move to play that guitar solo? What the f*** are you talking about?
I don't know.
Okay.
This is the only part in this case where things get a little bit strange because it starts to edge a little bit into the more like haunted supernatural side of this case.
Interesting.
And this bit doesn't last for long. On top of the organ sounds, doors started slamming around the house as if it was haunted.
Jesus.
The family were kind of getting sick of this mysterious ball causing trouble. So the mother, Jerry, thought it would be a good time to seek expert opinion.
Yeah, it's a couple weeks too late, I'll say.
Yeah, I don't know what the time frame is from them discovering the ball to getting to this point.
Too long. Whatever it is, too long. As soon as it started rolling up the table the wrong way, seek professional advice. I don't know what professional that is, by the way. Maybe a priest.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because now it's kind of haunted, so I don't really know who you get involved. Well, the person they did get involved was named Ron Kivett, the host of paranormal radio show Tales of Strange Things.
Fair enough.
He came and took a bunch of photos and interviewed Jerry, the mom, who eventually became like the family spokesperson for the ball. Hmm. While Kivett was at the house, he saw the Bat Sphere in action with his own eyes. And it didn't take long for him to conclude that whatever this thing was, it was from another planet.
Whoa. Okay, so we're, like you say, we're getting mixed messages. I'm sure many listeners at home were edging on the side of another planet.
Mm-hmm.
But then the organ music threw us a curveball, pardon the pun. Yeah. But he thinks it's still of extraterrestrial origin.
That was a good pun, by the way. Sorry, I talked over it a little bit, I think. So if you want, you could like deliver it again. And we could get like a clearer take, because it genuinely was really funny. So I think I won't speak this time over it.
Oh, sure. I think the organ music threw us a little bit of a curveball.
Boom, 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 boom.
Thanks, man. It's actually weird.
Stuff.
It's actually rare for you to.
I loved it.
Congratulate me on a joke. Usually after the episode is over, we hit start recording. You go, usually chastise me for all the mistakes I made throughout it. You get at me and say the jokes I tried to make didn't land. And I need to do better next time. So it's weird to get praise.
Those episodes, you didn't drop a golden pun like this, is what I'm saying. So if you keep this up, then we're laughing, baby. We're going to be winning awards. We're going to be having our own TV show. Just keep that gold coming, Malvena. I'm loving it.
If I had known you like puns, you know, there's more like it. Hey. Where I came from.
Well, from that point onward, the case exploded in popularity. So, what do you got? What do you got for me now? Pun guy.
Let's see. I just kind of threw it at me, but let me think for a second. I guess this thing exploded like a Civil War era cannonball, huh?
Jesus Christ. Oh, we need to. I think we have to stop.
Oh, well, don't be mad about
no,
it.
I
we
think
can,
we have
we can
to
edit
stop.
It from the. From the podcast.
That was,
what do you mean we have to stop?
I think I have to stop the podcast. That was
f*** off. There's no way we have to stop. We can edit it. We edit
that
stuff
was
out
so
all the time.
Bad. That
10 minutes ago, you went on a diatribe about the Civil War that didn't land anywhere. We had to cut the whole thing.
I just don't think I can continue in good faith having lived through that. I feel like, how will I ever smile again? Having that awful, awful poison
like,
in my brain.
It was a bad joke. It wasn't poison. What are you talking about? I've never seen you this annoyed
was,
about anything
just,
in the show's history.
This is what I get for giving you that attaboy. Honestly, I shouldn't have encouraged this. This is my fault. I blame myself as much as I blame you. No, actually, I blame you a little more.
Wow.
I truly
You're really
do,
being childish about this. I made
bad.
A joke and, okay, it wasn't great, sure, but...
Yeah. All right.
You're just sitting in silence.
Sorry.
This is
no, we can,
bizarre. I mean, this is way worse than what I did on the podcast.
Look, I'm just going to push on, okay? We'll just try and forget that ever happened. Well, reporters and photographers flocked to the house faster than a Civil War era cannonball.
Okay, that's
fired
enough.
From
that's
a,
enough. That's quite enough.
What?
You took exactly what I said.
But it was about the delivery. It was about how I said it. I didn't blink. I didn't think. And I went for it. And I actually had the balls to pull it off. Because there was potential in the joke, sure. But the way you delivered it, it fell flat.
You took about 2 minutes to yell at me for saying it and only to turn around a couple seconds later and deliver the same line over again.
And I nailed it. What can I say? Because I had that perfect delivery that was bright and it was light. Your delivery was heavy, all right? Like a Civil War era cannonball.
You know that was the same line. Okay.
It's a good line when I say it and when I say it right.
Do you want me to do any more puns in future?
Yeah, I do, but just run them by me first, and then maybe I'll say them.
There's
if
no
I
way
think
I'm
going to
do that, because...
say what you want, and I'll decide whether or not it's cut, and I'll decide whether or not later in my bedroom I record it on my own mic
That's
and put it into the
you
podcast.
You can't do that. That's There's no way.
I think I might do that.
There's no way that you would just cut my voice out of the podcast.
Thanks for stopping there, Kit. I'm glad that we agree and we're on the same page. Now to continue the story, which I am now reading in the studio and not, yeah. Reporters and photographers flocked to the house just to catch a glimpse of this magic ball. And Jerry wasn't shy about showing it to them. She would set the thing down, let it roll all over the place, showing the press what it could do. One reporter from the Jacksonville Journal remembers his encounter vividly. She told me to put it on the floor and give it a push. It rolled a ways and stopped. So what? She said, just wait a minute. It turned by itself and rolled about 4 feet. It stopped. Then again, it turned and rolled to the left about 8 feet. It made a big arc and came back right to my feet. So interesting that, you know, press are being brought to see this thing, and it's actually performing, which is amazing.
Pretty rare for a case in this paranormal life.
We've heard it so many times where, you know, it's the family that cries wolf, and then the press show up, the investigators show up, and coincidentally, the ghost is a little shy that day. Or the demon's on vacation.
All right, just say Jeff the Mongoose. All right, we're all thinking it. Oh, jeez. One of the most infamous cases in TPL history was a talking mongoose living in, I don't remember, the walls of a house.
In the walls, yeah. Who famously wouldn't shut the f*** up as well until anyone else outside the family.
Until anyone that didn't believe in him visited the house. It's actually kind of a miracle that he... That story's as famous as it is.
Yeah, it was a two-parter as well on the show.
Okay, that's quite enough.
We have a case here where the paranormal phenomena is happening in front of the press, which we love. But with all of that media attention, it wasn't long before the Betts family had another knock on their door. The U.S. Navy.
Oh.
They'd heard about the sphere's unusual properties and wanted to check it out for themselves. Ma'am? We're going to need to take that now. We've got a team on standby at the station in Jacksonville, ready to go. Now, to her credit, Jerry stood her ground and actually laid down some rules before she let the ball leave the house. She drew up a contract giving the Navy 2 weeks for their investigation, demanding that the ball wouldn't be cut in half or damaged, and that it would be returned unless it was found to be government property.
And not to get it wet, and least of all, to feed it after midnight.
I didn't know you could do this. I didn't know you could just bargain with the law.
Yeah.
A lot of these cases, the government, the Navy, the Army, the MIBs show up and pretty much do whatever they want and take whatever they want. So I got a lot of respect for Jerry, you know, standing her ground and being like, "F*** you. You want to take my ball? You have to sign this contract."
You. I realize that I have no power to stop you taking the ball because you will just murder me otherwise, but let's set some ground rules.
And it worked. The officer signed the contract and left with the ball.
The ball spent 2 weeks in Guantanamo Bay being interrogated within an inch of its life. The ball's wearing a little orange jumpsuit.
They crack it open almost immediately, right on her porch. Thank you, ma'am. We will treat it with the utmost respect. Yuck! It was full of bees. There were bees inside. It was a nest. Immediately, the naval officers put the ball to the test. One of the first things that struck them was how magnetic the ball was. It had 4 magnetic poles, 2 north and 2 south.
What?
This led them to their first key finding. The ball was made of common stainless steel.
Wow.
Not the most paranormal start. It's just a regular kind of steel ball.
Sure.
The ball could also withstand 120,000 pounds of pressure per square inch.
That's cool.
I don't know if that's a lot.
Yeah, for a solid ball of steel, who knows?
Because I feel like, you know, a measurement like pounds of pressure per square inch, that could be the kind of thing where, you know, an ant could hold like 500,000 pounds of pressure per square. I don't know what that means.
It's kind of
arbitrary to me.
Yeah, I've heard facts like, did you know your teeth can bite through, you know, can exert, 100 pounds of pressure? I don't know what
that
means.
What does that mean?
Who knows?
It's like when you have those video games where you like get a headshot and they give you 500,000 points and you're like, oh yeah, well, points are redundant now because that's absurd. You know, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
You could have just made that 5 points and this would be a lot easier to understand.
It's very arbitrary. Yes.
It really is.
But it would explain why Terry wasn't able to make a dent in this bish with a hammer.
It's true. And unfortunately, while they're doing the tests, of course, they weren't able to fully deploy the amount of pressure they wanted because it would have been at risk of splitting the ball, which is against the contract. So this was only just the limit they tested up to.
Well, I feel like if it had crushed it, they didn't do this knowing it wasn't going to dent it, did they? They were trying to dent it.
They're scientists, you know, they had an idea that this would probably not crush it. But they're like
the idea of don't worry, we'll get it back to you in one piece. We're going to give it the utmost respect. Then they're like,
fire up the Crushinator! The what?
Fire the Death Star.
Yeah, it's pretty ballsy to be like, to sign the contract, to be like, yeah, don't worry about it. We're still going to see how hard it is. The sphere's remarkable balance was also intriguing to them. It must have been designed for some specific purpose to be so steady. They couldn't determine how or why it was made, but thought it must have been manufactured on Earth. They x-rayed it, but their machine was too weak to penetrate the ball.
Okay.
Finally, they managed to find a more powerful scanner and discovered that the ball was hollow. The material was only a quarter inch thick, and there were two minuscule metal spheres trapped inside.
Interesting.
This thing is weird, isn't
it? The plot thickens.
A lot of people have been on record to be like, there are no welding marks on it. This ball has never been split before. It looks like a solid ball of steel. And yet it's hollow with two balls inside? Finally, they were ready to make their conclusion. We believe that the ball was made on Earth. The stuff inside is probably a manufacturing mistake. Now I know what you're thinking. How did the ball move around by itself? Well, we believe that the floor of the Betz's house is simply uneven and caused it to roll around. There will be no questions. Goodbye.
Sir, New York Times, we just have a simple question. Unleash the snipers. Snipers, take aim. What? This is one of those puzzling tales where clearly they don't want to say what's really going on, which calls into question why they called a press conference at all.
It's pretty wild to have this object, which multiple news reporters have claimed was doing loop-de-loops in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And to say that the reason why it was doing that is because the floor was uneven.
But we see this stuff all the time, the so-called rational explanation that is way too simplistic to possibly explain the phenomenon that's been experienced.
Yeah, unless the Betz live in a pinball table, there's no reason why this ball should be flying all around the place.
Oh, they live in Alton Towers, actually, so yeah. It's quite a few loop-de-loops.
Well, to be fair, that's a good time to bring this up. As I did say at the start of the story, the Betz's house was called the Castle.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it was a little weird.
It was a little uneven.
It was old. It was built in the 1920s. The Betz family were the first people to live in it all year round since its construction.
Hmm.
I mean, from this picture alone, you get a pretty good idea of what we're looking at.
What the hell is this?
That's the Betz family castle.
Well, this side of the quote-unquote castle has been demolished. There are doors leading to nowhere.
Well, I think that's
raw
a modern
wooden
picture.
Brick. Okay, this is after they lived in it, I guess.
Yeah, not the current situation.
It's basically a rundown kind of barnhouse situation with, but it does, to be fair, have a kind of tower and some kind of little turret and balcony on the tower.
It is on a hill, for
it
sure.
It is.
But I am assuming that the floors on the inside are not following that slant.
One would imagine.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine.
So the Betz family and the rest of the world were left with a hugely disappointing conclusion. But just because the Navy was done with it, it didn't mean that the case was over. In fact, several scientists decided to do their own investigations on the sphere, including the one and only Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
Hit the alarm!
The legend himself! I think I've probably said this every single time this dude comes up in a case. We have to do a full episode just on Dr. J. Allen Hynek. He pops up in so many paranormal cases all across America. anytime there's a UFO.
Zorro of the paranormal. He swoops in on a rope into a paranormal situation.
It's true, yeah.
Takes out a little thin sword, investigates it, carves his name, and people are like, but what did you do? And he's like, nothing.
And then he's beamed up into the night sky. While I was doing some touch-ups on this case, I went to his Wikipedia page, just because he's such a fascinating guy who's led such an incredible life. And he's been involved in so many different projects and operations. It is so funny to just go through the Wikipedia entry and read the names of some of these like operations.
Right.
You know, it'll just be something like, in 1960, he was involved in like Operation Revenge. It's like, what is this? Like, it has its whole own Wikipedia page. You're like, this is such a rabbit hole. You could be on this for hours.
And you know, like all those government project names, they're either really boring or really exciting.
Oh yeah.
Like it's not that like they're always pretty low key. Sometimes it's Operation Paperclip. Sometimes it's Operation Moonbeam.
Like, yeah.
There's no consistency.
I think my favorite one, which I believe was legitimately the name of a government program, which was, I think we talked about it before, Project Nuke the Moon.
Oh yeah. Which, classic project.
I'm scared now to go on record because I can't remember fully, but I am almost 100% sure that was a legitimate government program at one point. Dr. J. Allen Hynek was part of a team made up of 5 ufologists that were also scientists in their own right.
I love the idea that it was made up of 5 ufologists. Don't worry, they were also scientists.
I feel like
they
I
weren't
need to bring
just
that
crazy.
To fully investigate the sphere, Dr. Hynek even went all the way from Chicago to Florida, stayed in the Betz's family home, sleeping with the ball in his room overnight.
It's a little close for comfort, guy.
I do kind of like his approach, you know, where he's like, you know, these Navy guys, they want to put it in a lab.
Right.
They want to take it out of its comfort zone. I want to be with the ball. I want to sleep with the ball.
Show it a good time.
I want to lick the ball, wine and dine the ball, fuck the ball.
He
lives it.
It makes sense, doesn't it? It's like you want this thing to open up. Well, how do you get a person to open up? You don't crush them with 1,000 pounds of pressure.
Yeah.
You ask them questions and be nice to them, and then they'll open up and tell you their story.
I would love it if that is his approach to everything he's a part of. They're like, oh, Dr. Hynek, we need your help handling this incredibly dangerous radioactive piece of space metal. I don't want to just handle it. I want to touch the metal. The metal.
You can't touch the metal. You will die.
I want to sleep with the metal in a magic castle. Have you already been eating the metal? Because you've been off for a couple weeks now and your lips are green. By the end of their examination, most of the team, including Dr. Hynek, had decided that the strange orb was not UFO related. Another disappointing conclusion. However, one scientist on the team thought otherwise. Dr. James Harder. Now, he was a hydraulic engineer and a member of the National Enquirer's UFO panel, and he couldn't believe that his colleagues thought this thing was man-made. In a newspaper article, he even said, "I don't see how Dr. Hynek could be sure whether it's man-made or not without running further tests. There hasn't been enough research done on the thing to declare it to be man-made or otherwise. And I can't understand why Dr. Hynek is so interested in the thing if he thinks it isn't UFO-related." Frustrated, Dr. Harder decided to continue his investigation alone. This is such a good setup for like a villain. You know, the team of scientists where everyone gave up and he's like, no, you're fools. I will continue the experiments. You know, and he goes off by himself and then, I don't know, the ball rolls up his ass and into his brain and then starts controlling him.
Oh, yeah, you know like Hynek replying. He's like, Harder, you know the ball is too powerful. We can't control it, and that's why we must condemn it to the vaults.
You're a coward! You're a coward, Hynek! Science is about pushing the boundaries! That's what I plan on doing.
Let go of my arm, Harder. You're squeezing it. You're scaring me, Harder.
The ball has already given me its power and secrets.
Well, he decided to head back to inspect the site where the orb was initially found, and noticed a number of dead trees at the spot the ball was discovered. When it came to the sphere itself, he thought that it might be hollow, but it couldn't be completely empty. It was just too heavy. It had to be filled with some kind of fluid. He weighed the orb, x-rayed the orb, studied the orb. But of course, because of the contract drawn up by the family, he was never able to crack it open. Because of his belief that the little balls inside had a huge atomic number, Harder believed that what he was dealing with was possibly an alien atomic bomb.
Holy. I'm not shutting that idea down, but it is a little bit of a leap of the imagination from currently an intergalactic Roomba to alien weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah. I can appreciate how specific it is. I feel like there is a certain level of, maybe not evidence, but facts to back it up. You know, if he does believe that the contents inside the sphere have a huge atomic number, that they play some part in the mechanism. You know, bomb. That's kind of what a bomb is.
It's a hypothesis, isn't it? Because as you say, they know that it's the outside is stainless steel. They know how much stainless steel weighs. They know how much the whole ball weighs. Therefore, they know how much the contents must weigh. It's a little bit of a backwards puzzle.
What if just throwing some ideas out here, right?
Okay.
Throwing some shit at the wall. Let's see what sticks. What if it was an alien atomic bomb that was dropped on Earth at some point in the Earth's history, or as recently as that bushfire started, and they wanted it to detonate and basically wipe the planet of all life, but they miscalculated the gravitational force of the Earth's planet, thinking that it was stronger and that it would pull the ball down harder and detonate it, when in fact, the gravitational pull wasn't strong enough to pull the bomb down and detonate it, so it just landed in the garden.
You can't have just thought of that this second.
I think I just did. And okay. I think that actually is the answer. I think Harder is right. Now that I think of it. And I definitely don't think we should split it open now like a fucking Kinder Egg. Because it would level the world.
It's an interesting hypothesis.
Yeah.
Rory Harder Powers. yeah. I like these lines of inquiry.
You don't seem convinced.
It's pretty depressing to think that if there is alien life out there that we are trying to desperately make contact with, they don't even have... It's like getting dumped over text. The aliens don't even have the decency to say, hi, here's why we're exterminating you.
Right.
They just had a look through a telescope and decided that we needed to all die.
Before we even know they exist, they're trying to kill us. to them, we're just like animals, you know, on this planet. So they don't have to explain it. Would you explain to a monkey why you're going to shoot it before you shoot it?
Well, I wouldn't shoot the monkey in the first place. It's a weird analogy.
I'm saying it's a hypothetical.
I was sure you were going to go with like a termite colony or something.
No, a monkey. It's a specifically
shoot
a monkey. And it's a hypothetical situation. Like if you went to London Zoo and you freed a monkey because you thought it would be like a fun pet to have around the house. And then very quickly you realize that the monkeys are not like they are in cartoons.
Okay.
They eat and they shit and they don't like PlayStation 5s.
I was reading about this story last week about how a couple of monkeys went missing from London Zoo. It's a bit of a weird one because the zoo isn't even open.
That couldn't be me because I've only got one
monkey.
All right,
so you
zero,
do have a
zero
monkey.
Monkeys. I meant to say zero monkeys. I if that was me, were me,
you do have zero monkeys.
I would have taken one monkey, but you said that there were multiple that were freed. The guy who broke the cage accidentally set them all free.
Well, that's the thing. If someone broke in, probably the rest of them got out. So.
But back to the, because I do need to know this kind of before we wrap. Would you try and explain to the monkey why you have to?
So you shot the monkey. You shot a monkey.
Well, I haven't yet. I'm trying to find out whether I should try and explain to it. Because right now he doesn't seem to be obeying any of my demands. I don't think he speaks English.
No, he wouldn't.
Okay, so you're thinking just shoot him maybe.
I think hand yourself into the police. Let them deal with the monkey.
Well, we're getting a little bit off topic here. And we really do need to wrap this up. Because I know people throw around the phrase a lot. I got a monkey on my back. But I very much do, and I need to get back to my apartment as soon as possible. So Harder thought it could be an atomic alien bomb. But again, all of his theories couldn't be proven without cutting the sphere in half. He was keen to chop it up, despite thinking it might destroy the world.
Be worth it, though, wouldn't it?
But of course, Jerry Betts wouldn't budge. Eventually, Harder had to hand it back over to the family without the answers he so desperately craved.
I'm not even on Jerry's side anymore. Like, we need to know what's inside this thing. It's not like a living thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe to that family it kind of is. I think they're kind of treating it like a
dog.
Pet.
Get a dog.
Would you rather have a dog or an intergalactic alien anal bead that rolls around the house?
A dog. Still a dog.
Even more a dog at this point.
That's even more depressing than the alien nuke is that it's a vibrating alien anal bead. A single bead.
That must be a huge butthole, if that is the case. just something to think about.
Size of a bowling ball.
This is the reason I wasn't invited to be part of the team of scientists. Well, after years of investigations, the Betts family were done. They'd had enough of the constant phone calls, the media attention, and weirdo scientists coming to spend 7 minutes in heaven with their mystery sphere. In fact, even now, Jerry pretty much refuses to talk about it. Now, this is usually where we do a nice little conclusion and talk about some possible explanations, mm-hmm. but we can forget all of that bullshit because there's still a mystery to be solved. You see, Kit, the Bet Sphere is missing.
What?
No one knows where it is or what happened to it.
I feel like Jerry knows. Jerry seems to be the f***ing puppet master in all of this. If you're so protective of the f***ing sphere, you won't let anyone touch it. I think you know where it went.
No, the Betts family claim it's no longer in their possession, but there were rumors earlier on that the family suspected that one of the scientists might have switched out the real ball for a fake ball when returning it to the family. We do know that Dr. Hynek used to take the ball away for private studies. And according to some accounts, the last time he gave it back, it didn't roll around like it used to.
Oh, weird. It was rolling around like 2 seconds ago in the back of my car. Anyway, bye.
It's like paper mache made of newspaper clippings. Here is the mache.
It's just a bowling ball painted silver.
Bright pink.
I can still see the holes.
He bowls it down the street to them. There you go.
It's moving like it used to.
This, though, by far, has got to be my favorite part of the whole story. Years later, Dr. J. Allen Hynek's son, Paul, was approached by a woman at a convention. She asked him point blank if he'd ever heard of the Bet Sphere and showed him a photo of the metal ball. He replied, I've never heard of the Bet Sphere, but I have seen this ball before. He went on to say that he had a big metallic sphere in the family basement for years. Paul and his brother had no idea where it came from, but they would kick it around the floor. He said it rolled well and made slight jingly noises. He did say he couldn't be sure that it's the same sphere, and sadly, of course, his father had passed away, so he couldn't ask him. But that's kind of cool to think that possibly Dr. J. Allen Hynek did discover that there was something extraterrestrial about this ball, told everyone not to worry about it, took it back to his basement, where I assume he Pulp Fictioned the shit out of it, and returned this replacement ball.
Wow, a lot to digest there. So weird. This is the problem in some of these paranormal cases, right, is where we've got a very difficult to parse story as it is, and then you add in the f***ing weird complexities and idiosyncrasies of human behavior.
Yeah.
Like, we're assuming that everyone in this is trying to tell the truth and be honest. And then you've got one of the most prominent UFO researchers of all time apparently lying to the owner of his ball, stealing the ball, leaving it in his basement,
yeah,
letting his kids play with it. It doesn't really add up, but it is also somehow believable.
I know, it's kind of a weird thing, isn't it? Where, you know, when you look back at old reports and things, you're like, well, it was declared to not be weird, or this was officially said to be this. And then even today, people get caught up lying 24/7. Humans are not really trustworthy people. It would be better to have a rat scientist examine the ball. And at least if there were cheese in the ball, he wouldn't be telling us, I didn't find any cheese. What are you talking about, cheese? I don't know what you're talking about. Where'd the ball go? It's definitely not in my basement. He'd be nibbling the cheese. He'd be throwing the cheese all over the place.
It's true.
That's why I'm obviously a huge advocate for more animal scientists. And sure, that's why I
feel like it's a separate
you,
issue for this podcast. I think we need to just dial in on this. You just presented a pretty wild story for the last 45 minutes. So let's just park the whole animal scientist thing. I don't even want to. I know how these endings of these podcasts sometimes go. I don't want to get derailed with that.
I think you're probably right. It's because they could get a little off track towards the end when the case is over and the research
and you've
papers
presented
are done.
A compelling case as well.
Yeah.
That we should do justice and get to the bottom of.
Of course. But I should just say, before you think, because I think right now you think I'm some sort of weirdo. And that just came out of nowhere. But it is, of course, why I stole the monkey from London Zoo.
So yeah. You did do it.
I did do it.
We're going to have to cut that from the podcast.
Okay. Well, then you're going to want to cut all this as well. I made him his own lab coat. Let's see, what else did I do? I set up a little laboratory in my spare room, just filled with different like acids and things like that. Because I thought, you know that whole theory was like...
Gave him acids.
What is it?
With,
if you put 100 monkeys at a typewriter, they'll write Shakespeare or something like that.
Shakespeare, sure.
So I'm just going to have one monkey.
It's also not 100 monkeys. I think statistically it's like billions of monkeys, but anyway.
Right, right. Well, I've just got one monkey for now. I'm working on that. And I'm,
don't work on
I'm putting him in a lab, and just giving him a ton of Red Bull. So he has the energy of 1,000 monkeys. So he, the workload is increased.
All right. I'm going to step in and I am going to take custody of this monkey because you are abusing this monkey with acid and Red Bull.
Don't take Dr. Hynek. He was just learning to love. No, he hates me. He really does. I'm kidding.
He wants to investigate me with his teeth and claws.
Most of his investigations are how acid affects my face in the night. So I can't say if I approve of his investigations, but I damn well approve of his enthusiasm. Look, that's the case. That's it. That's pretty much it. There are some, obviously, some logical explanations that people have thrown out over the years. Some people claim it's a piece of machinery off of nearby appliances. Some people say that it was part of a clock. I don't know. You can tell I didn't put a lot of thought into these because they're not worth our goddamn time. The coolest one that I did find was during World War II. I believe that there were some reports of aircraft experiencing some sort of airborne dogfights involving ball-shaped UFOs that they believed belonged to the Germans. Of course, when the war was over, we realized that the Germans didn't have ball-shaped UFO fighter jets. But then everyone kind of just didn't care anymore and gave up because the war was over. And the descriptions of those balls kind of match this one. But this thing doesn't have like little wings or a little Gatling gun on the bottom of it. It's just a ball. So I'm not really sure.
Were you in a dogfight or was this thing just minding its own business and you unloaded your machine guns on it?
Took it down right over Florida.
That's interesting. I mean, that seems to fit the picture, though, more of something like the Kara object, which was able to fly about on its own.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, this thing seems kind of harmless. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, it is an undetonated atomic bomb.
Sure.
It kind of seems like, as we saw when it was on the table, it's just rolling around. Just kind of seeing what's over here, seeing what's over there. Maybe it's, some theories, the wild ones are like it's a alien satellite, it's beaming information back to some mothership. There's a lot of crazy theories out there, but unfortunately, aside from the photographs and testimonies we have from people at the time, there is pretty much no strong conclusion or no even real concrete theories as to what this object is. It's just weird.
Normally someone in the investigation that we're looking at is passionately campaigning for us to see it as a real ghost, a real haunting, a real UFO sighting, a real this or that. In this case, we've just got a big cluster of paranormal phenomena that we really can't prove.
Yeah. And everyone's guesses as to what it is seem about as accurate as a Civil War era cannonball. Am I right?
I insist we stop the pod because...
Well, I nailed the delivery at the very least, so... Right. A good joke is
let the listeners
judge.
We
can put up a poll this week.
Public opinion.
Yeah, we'll put up a poll this week and say who nailed the line. And they're going to say...
Everyone stopped listening the first time I said it.
They're like, what are you talking about? It's either that or I cut the first time you said it, so it's just me saying it twice. Look, that just about wraps up this week's case into the Betts sphere, the mysterious ball that fell from the sky. You know, it is a regular episode of the podcast. We do have to come down on conclusions. I wish we kind of had a stronger idea of what the options were, you know?
Yeah.
I guess just, is it paranormal or not? You know, I don't want to rattle on for too long, but I think for me personally this week, even though I don't really understand what this thing is, I feel like without being able to crack it open and see what's inside, there isn't enough to say confidently that this is paranormal.
This is one where I do have sympathy for the nerd scientists who investigated it, because if you're J. Allen Hynek, what can you say? How can you prove? It's like trying to prove the impossible, that something's from an alien planet.
How can you cook the omelet without opening the space egg? You can't.
Exactly.
You just can't.
It's a no.
It's a no. Unfortunately, a double no this week. But wow, what a case. Thank you so much to Amy Grisdale for the research on that episode and Cami Toman for the editing.
Arigato.
I hope you guys enjoyed it. I had a blast doing that one. You know, I've done a couple now where basically just a weird object comes out of nowhere and we tell its story from beginning to end. I think it's great.
And if you've come across any weird objects in your garden, let us know because we would love to hear about it.
Very true. Very true. Anything. Shovels. Gnomes. Sprinklers.
Just a beautiful flower. That could be interesting enough as it is.
Yeah, that might be a two-parter, actually. So thank you for listening to this week's episode of This Paranormal Life. If you're a fan of the show and you want to show it in style, as we announced last week, we are so excited to be able to offer you This Paranormal Life official merchandise.
Oh, yeah.
At the This Paranormal Life store. Kit, how do we get there?
www.thisparanormallife.com.
Woo! And where do I type it?
I don't know, on your computer, on your keyboard or something?
Keyboard. And do I need Wi-Fi?
For sure.
All right,
you gotta have an internet connection, bud. Yeah, absolutely. But hopefully if they're listening to this, they've got one.
You got one,
baby. Not a big deal. Not a big deal.
If you check that out, you can find a bunch of awesome This Paranormal Life merchandise, and we'll be adding more as we go deeper into the year. So keep your eyes peeled.
So check the link in the description of this podcast. That's a direct link to our store, thisparanormallife.com/store.
And of course, if you're a fan of the show and want to take that support even further, we have the This Paranormal Life Patreon. This is where you get that juicy bonus audio content. Let's say you've listened to every episode once, twice, thrice, and you're dying for more paranormal goodness. For as little as $5 a month, you get access to our monthly bonus episode, of which there is now 40 episodes plus, possibly.
Something like that.
There's a lot to go through, dating back to pretty much all the way back to when we first started this podcast, which is amazing. You get to hear the stuff that no one else gets to hear. And it is a great way to just support the show and make sure that things keep running here over at the TPL studios.
It's that simple, folks. All you got to do is turn on your Wi-Fi router.
Yeah.
Then open up your netbook. Start up Windows 95.
No, these are all really outdated. We actually have
You better do a quick antivirus scan.
No, we actually have a pretty young demographic, so I think
because viruses are everywhere.
Well, no, they're not on the store. They're not on the This Paranormal Life store.
Could
they're
be
definitely
though.
Not.
They're on every website, crawling the internet.
No, don't
that's
listen
why
to
you're
him.
Gonna need Norton's antivirus.
Don't listen to him. Look, just go in the store, check out the merch, check out the Patreon, and we'll be back next Tuesday with a new case faster than a Civil Era War cannonball.
Now that's enough.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.